Financial reform turns five today, and like many a little tyke, it's still somewhat unformed. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The Federal Reserve, in its capacity as banking system regulator, has issued new guidelines for the eight biggest banks in the country, increasing their capital requirements. This means those banks have to keep more easy-to-get-to money around to protect against big losses, or alternately, they could shrink themselves to avoid the requirement. Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman with more. Morning, Mitchell.
Hi, David.
All right, first, explain more why these capital requirements are here and what they do.
Well, the Fed's using the Dodd-Frank law to make the biggest banks hold more capital, as you said. It's money they can't invest or put at risk. It's to cover potential losses. J.P. Morgan, for instance, will have to keep an additional $12.5 billion on hand. Now, banks could choose to get smaller, which would reduce the capital they need to hold. And actually, J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs have been doing this. They've been selling off businesses like commodities, student loan origination, and insurance.
And this comes on this fifth anniversary of Dodd-Frank today, in fact.
Right. It's sort of a backhand birthday present, I guess. And there's still plenty of debate. A key criticism is that Dodd-Frank still doesn't really resolve the problem that banks are so big they'll need to be bailed out again by taxpayers to save the financial system. Here's Cornelius Hurley at Boston University.
We have all of these massive regulations that attempt to limit their risk-taking and limit the exposure to the economy on the one hand. But on the other hand, there is a federal safety net, a taxpayer safety net underneath these too-big-to-fail banks.
Now, banking industry lobbyists have a new different view. Basically, you've regulated us plenty already. All you're doing now is squelching the business. We're overly cautious, and we've got money sitting around in the vaults that could be lent out to juice the economy.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thank you. The biggest company of them all, stock price times the number of stocks, is by far Apple. It reports its quarterly results today, and it'll be interesting to see how that wristwatch is actually doing. Marketplace's Nova Safo has more.
Last year, during the third quarter, Apple sold 35 million iPhones. This year, analysts predict somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 million. If they're right, says Andrew Erkwitz of Oppenheimer,
this could be the first sign that the flagship Android phones are effectively done.
Erkwitz says Androids that cost about the same as an iPhone, like Samsung's Galaxy S6, aren't selling well. And with Apple going strong,
the smartphone market is going to become very much like the notebook and PC market, and Apple will be the one luxury brand left standing.
But Erkwitz says Apple still needs to sell devices that work with the iPhone and make it harder to leave Apple's ecosystem. Devices like the Apple Watch. James McQuivey is with Forrester Research.
Whenever they sell well, they share numbers. And if they don't share the numbers on Apple Watch, it will only be regarded as a bad sign.
McQuivey says there may be something more important than early sales numbers.
Whether or not there is momentum.
That would be a good indicator, he says, of the watch's prospects next year. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
A software add-on that helped make the internet come alive with video may soon rest in peace. Flash, made by Adobe, has long been vulnerable to hacking. Now some of the tech giants are getting fed up. Security experts at Facebook, followed by Google and Mozilla, the maker of the Firefox browser, are begging Adobe to put the software out of its misery. Adobe was also slow to slim down Flash to make it work better in mobile devices. Adobe, however, does not seem ready to pull the plug yet. A hotel boom is sweeping the country, and in some cities like New York and Houston, the construction is running at levels never before seen. In the end, this may help consumers, Julie Satow reports.
I'm with the developer Mark Gordon, who's taking me on a tour of his latest project, the five-star Baccarat Hotel in Midtown Manhattan.
Basically, this is what we call the Grand Salon. This is the living room of the hotel. You know, I think this is one of the greatest rooms in all of Manhattan, if not the U.S.,
We're standing in the second floor lobby. It's dripping in Baccarat crystal. There's enormous chandeliers hanging from the ceiling. Ornate vases adorn the tables. Even the walls are made of what looks like undulating crystal glass. It's the latest in a rash of new hotels opening across the city, and it's not just New York. Cranes are busy erecting hotels in Houston, Dallas, Miami, and L.A. In fact, since last year, hotel construction is up 21%.
The U.S. hotel industry is doing either well or really well, depending on where you're at.
That's Jan Freitag. He's with STR, which analyzes the hotel industry.
We broke records last year. We are breaking records this year. We have had more rooms available than ever. But we've also sold more rooms than ever and generated more revenue than ever.
All this competition is keeping room prices low. That's great news for Americans who want to travel this summer, especially to expensive cities like New York. But it's even better news for Europeans, whose spending power has been crushed by a strong dollar. Dutch tourist Danny Engels was wandering through Times Square with his family recently.
The exchange rate, it's okay. I mean, it has been much better. But it's gone up very quickly for us, at least. So it's getting more expensive.
Did you not buy as much as you thought you might buy?
Yeah.
That included not getting the iWatch on his wish list. Still, like many tourists, Engels and his family plan this vacation months in advance. That means, strong dollar or not, tourists are not likely to stay away. For Marketplace, I'm Julie Satow.
And news hit the wire in the last hour that fatherhood makes you fatter. A new study from Northwestern Medicine finds that a, for instance, 6-foot-tall dad gains about 4.5 pounds compared to a typical 6-foot-tall childless dude. Just why is not clear, but I would offer as one hypothesis drawn from experience, eating along with a hungry pregnant spouse. It also may be that homes with kids have more kid food lying around, stuff like cookies that dads have been known to purloin. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.